On the 26th of November, the distinguished playwright and actor, Emlyn Williams, celebrates his 75th birthday. In recognition, we present a new production of his play, The Wind of Heaven.
My name is Pitter, and I am, before all else, a student of human nature. Do you remember La Bruyère? By day, he was humble tutor to the French nobility. At night, he dissected them without mercy with a quill pen. I rather fancy myself as La Bruyère. Will you allow me to tell you a story? An incredible story of the 5 days' wonder of the village of Blestin in Wales. It was the summer of 1856, with the war in the Crimea just over. The village of Blestin. Mountains all round. Green, biblical hills. Is that how the whole thing started, perhaps? And the manor house overlooked the village. The house of Mrs. Parry. It was a fine summer morning that I first met Mrs. Parry. She was very beautiful. She would have been more beautiful if her expression had not been overcast with the strained attention of the dreadfully bereaved. I can see her now as I write, sitting, as she so often did, in the living room, by her old-fashioned Welsh harp, and staring, always staring out of the window, her eyes as empty as glass. It was so that her niece Menna found her that morning as she ran happily downstairs.
Auntie? Auntie?
Yes, my dear? Where are you off to?
I came to ask your permission. Isling Pugh is home from the Crimea, and a captain with a wound in the foot.
So? He's been pursuing you?
I'm afraid he has, Auntie, through the post office.
How did you know he was home, Slyboots?
He came to his bedroom window and waved a shirt out of it.
His shirt?
He said handkerchief would have looked better, but it might not show.
Oh. Is he very dear to you?
Oh, I think of him day and night.
Oh, this house is dead. When I plucked the strings of the harp, you'd have sworn it was not dead. But listening.
Oh, Auntie. If only you could talk about it. You never have, not since the day he died. I know to you I'm only a child, but talk to me.
I'll talk to you. I tell you that for 5 years I was married to a fine man. A year ago, on his way home to me from the war, he died of the Crimean typhus. And the day after, they told me, there died an unborn boy. That is all there is to say, that he is dead and I can still breathe and think. Oh, you mustn't be late for Isla. Leave me, Merchie.
Auntie, very well.
Excuse me.
Yes, Beth?
The washing book.
Oh, thank goodness. Work.
Could I have a word, Mrs. Parry, with all respect?
What is it, Beth?
It's this man, Mrs. Parry. Well, you know, that's the talk of the village, the one that has took the room in Blessing Arms. And full of questions, so they say, like he was from the police.
The police?
Oh, Mrs. Parry, with all respect, he's not after me, is he?
But why should he be?
Well, you know, what we talk about when I first came as your servant, that you said we would not talk about again.
That? No, Bet. I promise you he won't be after you.
But Mrs. Parry, could he be after Gwyn?
After your son? After a little boy of 13? Gracious, why?
For not having a proper married couple for a father and mother.
Oh,
I heard say they are very touchy on it in the law court. Quite right, granted. Oh, excuse me.
Mrs. Parry? Would you say Mr. Pitter?
Pitter? Yes, sir.
Oh, it is him, Mrs. Parry.
Ask him in.
She says for you to come in.
Well, thank you very kindly.
This may liven up the morning.
Thank you so very kindly, Mrs. Parry. I hope I find you well, ma'am.
You don't look like a policeman.
What a climb.
Oh, please, sit down.
Thank you so very kindly. Your Welsh hills may be a joy to the eye, but they are torture to the feet. Mrs. Parry, will you allow me to ask one or two questions?
If you're from the police, I take it I have little choice.
You have not always lived in this village?
No, I came here from England a year ago.
But you are Welsh.
Half Welsh, yes.
I learned a good deal about you, of course, at the inn.
I take no interest in the village, and I expect the same courtesy in return.
I beg your pardon. Are you religious, Mrs. Parry?
Not at all. What made you ask?
There is no village church.
There hasn't been for 100 years. What used to be the church is now the shop.
Mrs. Parry, I am looking for a list of the inhabitants. But no church, no register. How am I to set about it?
Now, I believe my uncle, who left me this house, made it his hobby to keep an account of local births and deaths. Now, that should be in a bookcase in the dining room. I'll go and see if I can find it.
Thank you. Thank you so very kindly. Interesting. Very interesting.
Good morning.
I turned with a start, for I'd heard no one come into the room. And there was my superior. There was Ambrose Ellis, flashily dressed as usual. Check coat, top hat over one eye, oiled hair, gloves, rings, walking stick.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
No joyous bowings from the waist.
My only wonder, sir, is that you haven't emerged from the trap door with a flaming dagger in your teeth.
An old-fashioned mode of entry, my dear Pitter, and in between trap doors, difficult to live up to. I heard your voice and a woman's, and to myself slunk inside for the pleasure of eavesdropping on the smack of lascivious lips. You failed me, Pitter. Widow, too.
Mrs. Parry.
She sounded plain.
She has a cover of pride to her. Very brittle, like eggshell.
We'll see what we can do. Birmingham has sunk even deeper into the doldrums, so I thought I'd follow you up and see for myself. What was that about the police?
Well, everybody's first idea was that I must represent the law. It seemed a tolerable way of acquiring information.
Ah, we'll do this thing in style. What information have you?
None.
None. But isn't the countryside buzzing with it?
On the contrary. Did you come up through the village?
No, over the hill.
It's an odd village.
Do you mean unenlightened? Because these mountain hovels are each more brutish than the last.
No, unhappily, one sees that anywhere.
I'm afraid these records may be out of date. Oh.
Mrs. Parry, this is Mr. Ellis, my superior.
I didn't hear a door knock.
There was none. I walked in without a by your leave.
Oh. How do you do?
Bursting with health.
I'm relieved. As you seem unable to leave your chair, I feared an infirmity of the lower limbs.
When I was first flung into English society with my stockings round my feet, I was forever bobbing up and down. I was in danger of bowing and scraping my way into obscurity, so I took to staying where I was, planted in a chair, like a rude cabbage.
You must be much disliked.
I'm happier disliked than ignored. Your book, please. Births. Deaths. Hello. For the last 3 pages, no births are marked.
There have been no births, sir, since 1845, 11 years ago.
Strange. Why is Evan Howell underlined in red?
He is a farmer and the nearest to a spokesman for the village.
Who shall send for him? Shall I join the police force too, Pitter?
What do you mean by that?
I am no more a policeman than you are.
Will you go, please?
No. Please sit down.
Who are you?
Pitter, would you oblige?
Ambrose Ellis.
Apart from an idea that Ambrose Ellis is a fairground in Birmingham, I have no
idea. Exactly, I am Ambrose Ellis.
You are the manager of a circus?
No, that's his corner, Pitter's. It amuses me to have my circus managed by an impoverished gentleman. I am the owner. A showman. Don't I look like a showman? Ain't I vulgar enough? Surely.
You are in one way, of course.
But in another.
You speak too well.
And don't tell anybody, but I started out as a schoolmaster, little Emery Ellis, a Welsh pedagogue.
Welsh?
My ear catches with pleasure your note of surprise. I aim to give a vague effect of the continent. I was born not 30 miles from here in darkness and in shame.
Mr. Ellis returns home today after 30 years.
Very touching, Peter, but it is not my home. I am counting the hours, Mrs. Parry, till I return to Birmingham.
So, you started out as a schoolmaster.
A little Welsh pedagogue in the red, rosy hell of an English grammar school. I was shorter then. I hadn't yet thought of stuffing the heels of my shoes with horsehair. The boys used to spit down my back. When one spat in my face, I felt the moment had come to feel humiliated.
What did you do?
Spat back and walked out.
And bought some horsehair and turned from Emrys to Ambrose Ellis.
Precisely. I fell in with the circus and started by tidying up after the elephants. Then, like other small men before me, I read a book on Napoleon and one wide awake night. Vowed I would be rich and famous. Then I ran into my first bit of luck, a double-jointed young woman who told fortunes. I made £500. Then I met a crossing sweeper with three thumbs and never looked back.
But what brings you to a remote village in this part of the world?
That is where I must bully you into helping us.
Mrs. Parry, were you aware that in your remote village you harbour an exceptional human being?
Indeed.
You have no idea to what Peter is referring.
Not the slightest.
You at least know a tramp named Will Jenkins?
No. Oh, wait a moment. Was he called before the assizes for drunkenness and thieving?
He's the man. He turned up in Birmingham and, being a criminal vagrant, decided that his natural port of call was my office. Next day, a piece of paper was sent round.
Dictated and just legible. For circus, sir, you in Blestin Village, a magic little man you will find. He stand middle of a field. Music is heard in the air. Please, £10. I heard him.
On his way to or from the Blestin Arms?
That's what I asked myself. Then I detected a ring of conviction somewhere and sent for him to discover he'd had the impertinence to die of exposure during the night. Can you help us?
Not at all. Except to assure you it's the figment of a fuddled brain.
I thought so at first. But those villagers are hiding something.
What did he say? Music is heard in the air.
Trickery? Or waves in the ether?
Mrs. Parry, can you conceive what this might mean to me? I can see the tent. Gold trumpets, red flutes, and daubed right across. Unique on earth, Ambrose Ellis's musical dwarf. Mrs. Parry, introduce me to the village spokesman, this man, Evan Howard.
If you could only arrange for him to call here tonight.
Very well.
Aha.
You had better come to dinner. First.
Oh, how very kind of you.
May a thirsty man of affairs remind his second-in-command that the village taproom must be open
until this evening, Mrs. Parry. And thank you profusely.
Having no manners, madam, I get my manager to manage the hand-kissing for us both. Good day.
Oh, excuse me,
Mrs. Parry.
Don't mind me, Bet.
Oh, is it all right for me and Gwyn to come in and do a bit of cleaning?
Yes, yes, come in, both of you. I'm going upstairs to finish the linen.
Thank you. Oh!
What is it? Why did you stop? Bet? What makes you look so happy all at once?
I thought I hear something.
No. There's nothing.
That's right. There is nothing. Thank you.
And then, as Mrs. Parry went slowly upstairs, a puzzled expression upon her face, the servant and her son went about their tasks. I must now tell you what happened at the manor house after dinner that evening, and before the arrival of Evan Howell, who, you will remember, we had come to meet. I remember my master and I were sitting in the living room, drinking our coffee after an excellent dinner. Mrs. Parry was still in the dining room, engaged in preparing further refreshment in the way of liqueurs.
I beg your pardon, gentlemen. Neither Bet nor I have the habit of drawing corks.
You should have come straight in. Within a yard of me, they pop of their own accord.
My husband always looked after these things.
Auntie Dillis.
Oh, come in, my dear. Gentlemen, this is my niece, Menna Parry. Mr. Pitter and Mr. Ambrose Ellis. Mr. Ellis asks to be excused. His legs are bad.
Oh, I am sorry, sir.
What are you staring at, madam? My legs?
I beg your pardon, but are you the gentleman from a circus?
I am a circus.
Mr. Ambrose Ellis is the Ambrose Ellis. I trust the liqueur is satisfactory, sir.
I haven't an idea. I'll drink anything out of a bottle, except ink.
Oh, I can't keep it to myself any longer. Even with strangers here, I can't, Auntie Dillis. His Lynn has asked me to marry him.
He has? Oh, my Noeline, I'm so glad for you. Oh, she's young and happy. Congratulate her, you two hard old hearts.
It's charming, very charming.
I'm delighted to give my consent, my dear.
Oh, I knew you would, Auntie Dillis. But, well, it's Isflin's mother.
Would you prefer us to...
No, Mr. Bitter. What is it, dear?
Well, it is church.
Church?
Isflin's mother wants you to go to church.
Me? But I haven't been inside a church for 20 years.
Mrs. Pugh knows that, and she says it looks odd.
Considering that most people go 3 times every Sunday, of course it looks odd. It is odd. But it is surely my own affair. I'm sorry, my dear.
I think so. Perhaps we ought to go.
No, don't go, please, for a minute. Mrs. Pugh doesn't like you either, Mr. Ellis.
What do I do? Hang myself?
My dear Menna, you're forgetting your manners. What meddling ideas has Mrs. Pugh been putting in your head?
Oh, it isn't only that, and Isflin says so too. Oh, now I'm making him sound stupid, and he isn't. He's fine and sensible.
You're young and very much in love. I'd have behaved like you at your age.
Auntie Dillis, are you an atheist?
This is interesting.
My dear, what an impossible question to answer.
Mrs. Pugh says, do you believe in God?
Mrs. Parry says...
No.
Oh.
This is absurd, Menna. Have some coffee. It's still warm.
But, Mrs. Parry, were you not brought up in the middle-class sanctity of England?
Under the watchful eye of a good queen, and even better, Albert.
The last time I was inside a church, I was 15. Another glass. Mr. Ellis.
You are very kind, but Mrs. Parry, pray, let us go back to your church.
Oh, the sermon was droning to its close. Suddenly, the door opened. There was a whisper in my ear. My mother, the only being who'd ever loved me, was dying. I remember that I looked round, still stupid from the news. It seemed darker. The preacher was eyeing the clock, the ushers discreetly fingering their collection plates. I took a last look at the bland, furtive faces, got up, and walked out into the heathen air of the street. I've never been back. Mr. Pitter, may I fill your glass?
No, thank you kindly, ma'am.
But surely, Auntie Dillis, if you had believed in God, he would have given you strength to
bear... I've always had an open mind on the subject. Nothing has ever happened to fill it with the right thoughts, that's all. Now, Menna, forget all the impertinent questions Mrs. Pugh has asked you to trip me up with and go to bed.
But couldn't you come to church, Auntie, just to show that... Well, that all is well.
Exactly. Mrs. Pugh is confusing being religious with being respectable. Go to bed, dear.
She says if you turned your mind to God, you would be resigned to your widowhood.
Resigned to my widowhood. I can hear her saying it. How dare she put into such a glib mouthful what I have been feeling day and night for a year. How dare she? Go to bed.
Very well, aunt.
I must apologize, gentlemen. I hope I wasn't too harsh. The young can be irritating, though they don't mean to be. Oh, my love, where are you? Believe that all this time I have not shed a tear, and I lose my balance in public. If I were a man, I could say, damn Mrs. Pugh. Oh, I am deeply ashamed. I'll go walking in the garden as a penance.
No,
pray, sir, don't disturb yourself. Oh, he's here. Evan Hull.
I'll talk to him. You go your way.
I will not hear of it. It'll teach me not to indulge in hysterical displays. Sit my hello, Evan Hull.
Bye, young Mrs. Curry.
Now, would you come and swill? Mr. Ellis and Mr. Pitter, this is Mr. Hull.
Sit my hello.
How do you do?
How do you do?
De very Norwegian, Evan Hull?
Dimbiot, Mrs. Parry.
Mr. Ellis, you were brought up in Welsh. Would you favour us?
I repudiated my native tongue years ago.
Oh, and the interview is going to be difficult. I don't share a demonstrate snake.
Well, me vitra iaith me dai or iaith.
And we? He says he knows a little English.
In my house there is a book.
Good. Stidwch I lawr, Evan Hwyl.
Diolch. In my house there is a book, English Bible authorized version it is. And in the night, when the daily toil in my farm is done, I commit the word to my heart.
No, my man.
Evan Hwyl, Mr. Ellis here is the owner of a circus.
The position is roughly this, Howell.
Excuse me, Dorothy. Beddy... circus.
Ah. What is a circus?
Oh. Circus is... Pitter, will you oblige?
This is a place where tricks are performed by gentlemen, ladies, and animal.
I like that, Pitter. It has a dignified ring.
What is your trick?
I own it. I have no trick.
You have an elephant.
12. They run round, biting each other's tails to the tune of drink to me only with thine eyes.
Doth one stand on the back of the other?
No.
Oh. You have a lion.
5. One very wild. He killed his keeper last February.
Doth one...
No, they don't stand on each other's backs either.
Oh.
I have a parrot who can say rule Britannia and what's your game, Mrs. Gladstone.
Nothing else?
Well, I haven't.
I hope I'm giving satisfaction.
Bear with me, sir. Do you wish for me to show myself in your circus?
You?
What is your trick?
I have always heard say that when the English behold somebody that is not English, they laugh very hearty. Lo, I would show myself as a Welshman.
I'm afraid my public is a trifle too jaded for that. But you could come as a keeper, a sort of companion.
No, thank you, sir. I got my farm. I would fain thrust myself forward to covenant with thee for a sight of the circus.
Any time. Just mention my name.
I would indeed if the elephants was to stand on each other's backs. No staiche.
Evan Howell, Mr. Ellis has heard something.
Something?
Who is this creature who can make his own music?
Nobody will suffer, even if the little man is playing a trick.
The time is nearly come, but it is not yet.
What do you mean, Evan Howell?
You are heavy in the heart. I have been thinking of Mrs. Parry this day, all the time I was digging in my field.
It is kind of you to be sorry for me, but please...
I am not sorry for you. And do you know why? Because great things are coming to you, Mrs. Parry. Yea, the same great things that are coming to us all in the village of Blestin.
Has the village of Blestin suffered?
Suffered? We have not heard. Nostar.
Evan Howell, after what you just said, they have the right to know.
11 years ago, the young ones go down to Port Blestin and take 3 sailing boats, 64 boys and girls under 10, and 20 babes in arms, on the finest day of summer. Not a breath of the wind. But lo, in the corner of the sky, no bigger than a man's hand, a cloud. And it came to pass that the cloud grow to fill the sky with power. A storm like none of us in Wales hearkened to. And the boats washed up next day. And the bodies, one by one. My married girl and her 2 little ones, I find them myself. The few left in Blestin, they came to me as pitiful as any of my own beast when they got no comfort and go dragging their pain from one door to another. We have lost our children. I spake to them. In bitterness they have been torn from us, and in bitterness the men and the wives will stay from each other. There will be no more children in Blestin. And since the day the first poor swollen babe was cast ashore like a bladder of foul air, not a voice hath rose in harmony. Dead in our hearts we have been, like you are now, Mrs. Parry. Dead as the proper dead in the ground.
You talk of the bitterness of that time. But there is no bitterness in your voice as you tell of it.
What has happened to change you?
Something in the last 7 years. Something in the air of Blestin.
Music, for instance,
played by a dwarf.
Excuse me, a dwarf?
Dean Bach, Eoin.
Ah, a little man. Nah. Our little man is not a dwarf.
One more question. What is this wonder?
It is writ in my Bible at home. John 5:24. A dwarf. A dwarf.
I'm glad he is amused.
It's not a dwarf, but it's a little man.
The question is he going to be any good to me?
Will you be honest enough to say that for a moment your Welsh blood, too, was tingling...
With something new?
Something strange.
Well, my dear, I expect. We shall call on you in the morning.
Wait. What was the verse he said?
The Gospel according to St. John, 5th chapter, 24th verse.
Bravo, Peter, the true pulpit manner.
Dent? Yes? May I borrow your Welsh Bible a moment?
Yes, Mrs. Parry.
Now, the tramp in Birmingham said...
In Bleston, the magic little man you will find.
A little man? A small creature?
Ah, a small creature. Why not a boy?
A little boy. Of course. Dean Bach. A little boy.
But there are no children in Bleston.
But there was a child in Bleston. One child. And there he stood in the doorway. A shabby peasant boy of 13, his hair in his eyes. The son of Mrs. Parry's servant, holding out his mother's Welsh Bible. No sound but the leaves of the book, as Mrs. Parry turns them and finds the place.
What is it in English, Mrs. Parry?
The hour is coming and is here, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live.
Very early the following morning, I became acquainted with some news. Indeed, such disturbing news that I felt it my duty to hurry round to the manor house and inform Mrs. Parry immediately.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Parry. A call before breakfast. So very irregular. How fortunate that you should be already abroad. Would you be so good as to call the young lady?
Menna?
It's a trifle urgent.
Menna?
What is it?
Finish dressing quickly, dear, will you?
Yes.
What is it, Mr. Pitter?
I happen to be the only one stirring, and the hospital doorman seized on me. It is to do with young Pugh. It appears that he was taken in an hour ago.
You mean...
The plague. The Crimean plague.
Typhus? Nonsense. Typhus takes a full day to develop. Oh, I'm sorry to have startled you, Anuel. It's probably nothing. It's your fiancé. He's been taken suddenly poorly, that's all, and has asked to see you.
It appears you'll be allowed to wave to him through the window of the ward.
Is he in hospital? Is it the plague from the war?
Oh, of course not. A feverish cold, I expect.
I have Mr. Ellis's conveyance outside. I could deposit the young lady at the gate.
Thank you.
Auntie Dillis, is he in danger?
If I thought he was, would I be staying behind? Now, go with Mr. Pitt.
Yes. Oh, Auntie, I'm glad you said fiancé, even though it's a difficult word to pronounce.
Later that morning, Ambrose Ellis found Mrs. Parry motionless at her window, her eyes fixed on a little figure chopping wood in the garden.
We said we'd sleep on it, Mrs. Parry. Well...
I didn't sleep, did you?
There's a light in your eye that wasn't there yesterday.
Is there? I'd never noticed him before. He's cutting wood for his mother, who is my servant. I cannot get it out of my mind.
My dear Mrs. Parry.
You were moved, too, last night.
You were moved, were you? Shall I remind you of your words as I left? In the morning, you said... We shall be smiling indulgently at the whole business.
When that door closed behind you both, it was silent in the house. Suddenly, I heard a sound. The beating of my own heart. And I knew that this house is dead no longer. I spent the whole night walking from one window to another. Ambrose Ellis... Is something come to us that for 2,000 years the tear-stained, blood-sick world has been waiting for? Is Jesus come to Blessing Village?
From what Pitter told me on the road just now, there is one thing that may easily have come to Blestin. The Crimean plague. Blestin, the village of the religious mania, a mania to which Mrs. Parry is tempted to yield as a desperate remedy for sickness of mind. Those are the facts. I like facts. They keep one sober. Now, will you do one thing for me? Talk to the mother.
I have an idea that may not be so easy.
Shall I get the gentleman some breakfast, Mrs. Parry?
Thank you, Bet. Not just yet. Gwyn gets up very early, doesn't he?
Oh, I don't believe in coddling a boy that age.
How old is he?
14 next birthday.
When did you first come to me, Bet?
A year next month, Mrs. Parry.
What exactly did you do before then?
Oh, but excuse me, Mrs. Parry, I told it all to you and you said all right.
Of course it was all right, but I wasn't paying attention. You lived in the village, did you?
In Blestin, yes. A housekeeper to old James Jones Shoemaker I was, and then 2 years last August we buried him. I told you.
But how did you both live after he died?
After he died? Well, Gwyn and me made ourselves free and easy and we went back to live in the pigsties.
Pigsties?
Oh, no pigs, Mrs. Parry. We wasn't as free and easy as all that. No. Oh, we had a good day clearing the sties out. Well, the two of us never off our knees. But by the sun was down, we got the place, so it was better. Smelled terribly homely, but no worse.
Thank you for lending me your Bible.
Pleasure, Mrs. Parry.
But how did you learn to read?
I cannot read, Mrs. Parry. No time for that. But Evan Howell, he read out of his English Bible, and I mark the side in my Welsh one, so now I know in my heart some of it.
What do you think of it?
It is nice when it tells a story.
Life of Christ.
Yes, sir. It is a nice story, that. I will be getting back to my work.
It seems a pity your son can't learn English if he's to get on in the world.
He seems happy with a Welsh.
Is he musical?
Oh, musical, sir. Oh, no ear for a song at all. He's no Welshman there.
Do you want him to get on?
If he's to get on in the world, sir, I am willing. I am willing for him to do whatever it is right for him to do. Excuse me.
You were right, damn it. It isn't easy. I was hoping for another sort. The garrulous mama of the child genius. This is a Welsh peasant with a vengeance, thrifty and cautious. She knew what we were after. She's heard about the circus and she's biding her time. Is it any good my talking to him?
Having gone to such pains to unlearn your Welsh, how can you?
You could question him.
I suppose so.
Will you?
Not yet.
Why not?
I'm afraid to.
Afraid because you know it would burst the balloon.
Perhaps. Did you sleep at all last night?
I went walking, a practice I have detested for years.
Where did you walk?
Up that mountain. I had not been alone on a mountain since I was a child. I used to spend hours by myself, squatting barefoot on the edge of a crag with the wind for company, a little ugly goat.
But your little mind was not the mind of a goat.
No. Mine had wings. I could feel it. Positively feel it, I tell you. First, beating inside my breast, knocking feverishly against the bones, and then out, away. High, wide away. I held out my hands after it. They glowed in the dark. I was part of the earth. I was part of the sea and the sky. I was alive, and once, the adoration of the moment. My body tried to strain after my mind, and I was on the point of crashing to a ridiculous death.
And if you had?
I'd have been lowered hastily into a pauper's grave by the crossroads, and the grave, if on the small side, being a child's, would be forever mistaken for a dog's.
But something, at least, little Emrys had achieved. He'd filled the earth and the sea and the sky with the glow of his own spirit. Can you say the same of Big Ambrose, who has his name in letters of flame across a dozen tents?
No, not the same. Last night it might have been the same mountain. I looked at my hands. Larger, more worn, manicured, but jutting from the same body, flowing with the same blood, this body of mine, I thought, this shell I must cart about to the end of my days. What has it been up to? All those years in between, eating, drinking, making money, and making love. More money than love, and better quality, too.
But on the mountain last night, you suddenly felt weary of your body.
Sick, to the point of nausea.
Ah, Peter, I know that knock. Monsieur Lapierre, quick, the end of your walking stick, we're waist deep. Oh, you're thoughtful, Peter. Do the villagers still look as if they were waiting?
Every time I looked round, they were looking round at me.
Would you say they were uneasy?
No. Very serene.
Peter, I've got to know where I am. Is this child going to be any good to us, or isn't he?
Ask his mother.
Where the oracle has spoken.
I will not allow you to be unkind to her.
I can't vouch for my temper, but I'll try.
I'll call her. Beth?
Yes, Mrs. Parry? Yes, Mrs. Parry? Oh, excuse me.
I'm going to ask you one or two questions.
Beth, there's nothing to worry about.
It's about your son.
Yes.
Did you foresee that he would be the subject of this inquiry?
Yes, sir.
Why?
I will tell you, sir, not the spit of a lie. I am worried about the way people in this part of the world are carrying on about him. They are making him out to be something that no ordinary boy could be.
You mean?
I mean what it says in the Gospel of John. Oh, there, I have said it. What you have lifted off my poor chest.
But when did this idea start?
Soon after we come to Blessedin, sir.
But where did this extraordinary idea come from? About your son?
From the music, sir.
Ah.
Oh, just a bit of music.
Never mind how ordinary it was. How did you first hear it?
Don't be afraid, Bet.
It was the morning and the spring of the year, because the trees that had been black spikes for so long you could hit them for it was by now green bubbles all over them. I was stooping just outside the door, and all of a sudden I heard it. The music.
At first, I think for sure it is noises in my head, and I was just going to blow my old nose to help, like.
When it come to me that it is not in my head.
Was it singing?
Like men and women, you mean? No. No, not singing. More like a wind.
Was it like, musical instruments?
Excuse me, sir?
Clarinet. Pianoforte. Violoncello.
Could you fall back into the English?
Was it like this?
I don't know, sir. Well, like a wind. I am sorry.
Where did it come from?
Oh, it was everywhere.
How do you mean, everywhere?
The sky and the earth that my 2 feet was on, and the air that is between. It catch the little things best, like the proper wind does. The bitter white cloud that you get in the spring, blowing past the mountain there, and the tip of the trees with the green bubbles on them.
Was it a sorrowful sound?
Sorrow? Oh, it was happy.
How happy?
It was like, as if you was to take all the children in Wales, and tell them they can stay up and play till they drop, so long as they stand in a row just for now and sing for joy. And then you take the song and you give it to the sky to sing instead. Happy like that it was.
And he?
Where was he?
Coming across the field up to his knees in the grass, for he was then 6 years old. Cap on the back of his head like boys get when they've been running, isn't it? But walking very slow he is now, with the sun on him. Slow, as if it was for the comfort of the little thing he is carrying.
What was that?
A lamb.
Lamb?
Such a babby that it wasn't able to walk. And I shouted him quite nasty. Put down that beast, I say, with it being Evan Howell Farmers. Do you want you and your mum in jail for sheep stealing?
Oh, please, can I go?
But the music...
With getting worried about the police, I did not notice it was finished.
And you call that ordinary?
Well, sir, if it happened, it must be ordinary, isn't it?
Bravo! Mrs. Parry, your philosophers have beaten at their game. Now, more common sense. What did your son say when you spoke of the music?
Oh, I never did mention it, sir.
But you told others.
When Evan Howell asked about the lamb, I tell him. And sorry I am now, for he tell the others, and that is how it starts.
They heard the music, too?
Yes.
Can he produce the music to order?
I do not know, sir. I never interfere.
Before I return to Birmingham, you and I and your son are going to have a little talk.
Yes, sir. Oh, excuse me, sir. Did you say Birmingham?
I did.
Is your name Ellis?
It is Ambrose Ellis.
Gwyn, tell me about you. Excited he was. From a circus, he said, and all the way from Birmingham.
Yeah, I take it there was chatter in the village last night about my having arrived.
Oh, it was not last night that he told me.
When was it?
Oh, it was the day he was on the mountain that long. I thought sure he would not be back by the New Year. That's right, New Year's Eve.
Towards Ambrose Ellis. But he, amazement and fear in his eyes, strode quickly past us into the hall and out into the air. Having received our post from Birmingham, I called once again at the manor house in the early evening of the same day, in order to go through the letters with my master. He had, so Mrs. Parry told me, been sunk in a deep and frightening trance since that morning. Some time after I arrived, he walked into the room, oblivious of all, his clothes no longer tidy, his hair no longer smooth, but flowing wildly from his head.
Mr. Ellis, would you like some food?
I'll wait for my midday meal.
The midday meal was 5 hours ago.
Your letters, sir?
About time to let's have them.
From your bank, sir.
How do we stand?
Up £370 on investments, up £261 on profit, up £23 on sale of old stock.
Old stock, that will be the remains of the burnt-out tent.
Exactly.
Good going.
It was bought by, let me see, the Wood Street Children's Hospital for an outhouse.
Ah, if I hadn't stepped in, Peter, you'd have thrown all that stuff away.
Children's Hospital must have needed an outhouse very badly to pay £23 for it.
When I was a child, no living soul lifted a finger so that I should not starve.
Yes, Peter, the reason for the urgency would be the recent fire in a local candle factory.
Ah, yes, child labour.
50 children dead. And 23 badly burnt.
£23 profit from 23 children. £1 a child. Good going.
Go on, Peter.
Details of your life insurance policy. In return for payments agreed, at the age of 50, you will be paid the sum of £2,000. At 60, £3,000. At 70, £4,000.
£9,000. To celebrate on your 70th birthday, you shall give a dinner party.
To all the social superiors who ever looked through me in public thoroughfares.
It will be a large party.
I shall take the Birmingham Town Hall. After coffee, I shall rise, smoking a cigar, and tell them how much money I own and what I think of them. When I have chewed the cud of my own importance,
you will leave them and stalk down the steps into your own conveyance. 4 horses.
Black horses with plumes, an empty carriage with a box, the best oak with silver handles to match my hair. I shall lie carefully in the box and ride through the crowded streets in solitary triumph.
I'm sorry to have been so long.
Minna, my dear, how is he?
It wasn't the typhus fever.
Of course it was.
It was cholera.
Cholera?
It must have been on one of the ships, the doctor said.
This is your plague in earnest, Mr. Peter. And is Louis?
He died about an hour ago. I could see his mattress from the window. He was an old man and he was 20. What does it mean?
Oh, you're faint, my darling. You've been standing at that window 10 hours. Come to bed.
I know now what you meant, Auntie Dillis. I can never go to church again. I've never done any harm, and I'm sure he has not. He and I were making plans last night for our children, but there's nothing wrong in plans, is there? If there is, I didn't know it. What have we done?
Look, they're all in the village street, 100 of them.
moving slowly this way.
Hector!
Yes, sir.
I want some cold water thrown, and you're the one to do it. Quick!
And what heading does this go down in your book?
Quick!
I must confess, sir, that this is something I am not able to classify.
I am frightened, more frightened than I have ever been in my life. Mrs. Paris, stay with me. Stay with me.
I am here. Evan Howell.
The day is come, Mrs. Parry, and the voices are quickened in song.
But, Evan, the plague is come to Blesting.
Have you seen what I have seen, Evan Howell? A warm young face on a pillow, freezing to death with sunlight across.
I have seen what you have seen and more, for I just walked to the door where all the other soldiers lie stricken with the same plague, the skin of them burnt or wasting or wet with blood. And tears that never dry, all with their eyes on me. And I nod my head as if to say, all right, lads, all right. And I come straight away here. Will you call his mother, Mrs. Parry?
She is here.
Yes.
You've changed your clothes, Bet.
Yes, Mrs. Parry, my Sunday best. I was hoping you would not mind.
Where is he?
In my kitchen, blowing cold onto a bowl of porridge. Got to keep your strength up now, lad, I said.
Tell from the beginning of the day. Peter, write it down after for us to examine close. Cold, cold, and close.
Well, this morning, a start like any other day. I scold him.
Tell us, then.
I scold him for leaving the chopper out all night. He keeps himself for 10 minutes like boys do and off to market whistling.
That he cometh from market, he meet Lissy Post, that spoke to him that Isluin soldier hath brought the plague to Blestin.
That's right, Evan. And he come home and I say, hello, something happen.
How could you tell?
From his step, for with the step of a boy he went out. And he come back like he got a lot on his mind.
The step of a man.
And he come straight to me and he say in the Welsh, dry your hands, ma'am, and sit at the table. I look at him quite soft, sit down, I say, how can I sit down, middle of washing up? And he smile and say very quiet, I am a servant as well, ma'am Bach, the servant of my father.
And he ever said anything like that before?
Oh, goodness me, no. I never encourage him in such talk. I just bring him up to say his prayers and tell him about God. Oh, from the start, something tell me there was little need, for he knowed it all already. And then he tell me about his father. That his father was broken-hearted to let him go, for he had lost him once before. You see, ma'am, he say, the world is in a poor way again, for many are wicked. And them that is not wicked is weak. And there is a lot of stiff necks about, he say, and the rest got to suffer for it, and that is not right. And my father, he say, to show the world that he think more of them than they do themselves, he is sending me. Only a boy he is, but he make it sound very nice, I can tell you.
Is that all?
No. His hands in the water, he say that the sick are waiting for him. He spoke.
I will finish it for you. He spoke of me.
He did. Go to Emery Sellis, he said, the lad that was on the mountain, he said. What would he have meant by that?
He meant that there was once a child who looked one night into the sky and put his hands to his breast, because in his breast he felt something beat its wings, and he knew it was his immortal soul.
But now I know again, for certain, and forever.
And without knowing that he was doing it, I'm certain of that, my master put his hands together in an attitude of prayer. Then the click of the kitchen door and the child came into the room, still in his shirt sleeves, and stood by his mother in the radiant evening light. She smoothed his hair, and suddenly, tearfully, she embraced her son. He put his arms around her, and then, his eyes on Evan Howell, he moved slowly, certainly, to the outer door, to the waiting, singing crowd. Yes, the village had woken from its long sleep into song. Strangers were pouring into Blestin, and the inn was now overflowing, so that Mr. Ellis and I were staying in Mrs. Parry's house. Two nights later, I remember, I had fallen asleep on the couch, my notebook on my knee.
Miss Lander! Good gracious. What time is it?
4:00 in the morning.
Oh, I have not been up as late as this since the night I came into the world. What is your news?
Mr. Pitter, the plague has gone from Blestin. The soldiers are cured.
Cured?
Islin woke up as he was being lifted into the trap, and he was dead, Mr. Pitter.
What did he say of it all?
Well, all he remembers is a child standing over him, washing his face in cold water, and knowing that the water was holy.
A miracle?
Yes. Oh, Mr. Pitter. You do not think that with getting Islin back, I'll be required to turn into a nun or something?
Oh, that would surely be giving with one hand and taking away with the other.
Yes, it would. Oh, I am relieved.
Still up, child, to bed at once after such a day.
All right, Auntie. Good night. Good night, Mr. Pitter.
Good night, Mrs. Parry.
Oh, I thought I'd never get here. That hill was a nightmare. The roadside is thick with sightseers. I hadn't thought of that. Two men offered me £50 for a talk for the London Times. And there are men and women under gas flares dancing. After the hospital, it was grotesque in extreme. And the doctor who ran away is back, strolling between the beds as if he'd done it all.
The Lord is scarcely returned to earth, and vanity and hypocrisy flourish at his feet like nettles.
I bought you a cup of tea, Mrs. Parry.
Oh, thank you, Bet.
Excuse me, Mrs. Parry. Is Gwyn behaving all right?
Yes, Bet. He's behaving all right. When I'm away from him, I see him with a light round his head. But in that hospital, he's a child, running messages, his hair in his eyes. The crowd outside can never dirty that. He asked me specially about the crowd, the only time he spoke of himself. Just because I've done a miracle, he said. They will not expect it every day, will they? Because my father is the one to say when I do a miracle and when I do not.
And I told him in that kitchen, I said, your father will not say yes to them miracles, neither only once in a blue moon, I said. For if people is going to be brought back from the dead right and left, in no time the earth is going to be shocking overcrowded.
Her common sense is like a rock.
A rock we shall cling to time and time again, Emrys Ellis and I.
Oh, how has Mr. Ellis been at the hospital?
More a child than the real one. It's touching to see him. He's home.
Does Mrs. Parry live here?
What?
Will you come in?
Mrs. Lake.
Good evening, Miss Pitter. Well, good morning, rather.
Mrs. Parry, may I present Mrs. Lake of Birmingham?
Oh, Pitter, make it at least an elegant suburb. Mrs. Parry, how do you do?
How do you do, Mrs. Lake?
I trust you'll forgive this most untimely call, but my coachman saw lights in the house.
Please, take off your cloak and sit down.
May I?
Oh, thank you. What a peculiar atmosphere in the village, Mrs. Parry. Worse than Hampstead Heath. They say it's to do with a child whom somebody is passing off as the new Messiah, of all things. Well, if that is Ambrose's idea of a new circus attraction, he has gone too far even for me. What is it all about, Mrs. Parry?
It's not easy to explain.
There was an outbreak of cholera in a military hospital here.
Cholera? Good gracious.
Well, the alarm is over. A local doctor has effected a new cure, hence the celebrations.
Oh, I have a horror of illness, especially in the country. I do dislike the country, don't you? All these trees, each quite different. I like people preferably around a table, don't you? Please don't bother to answer any of the vapid questions. I ask them purely out of nervousness.
Well, I'm nervous too.
You look exhausted, Pitter. Go to bed. Curfew.
Oh, yes. Very well.
Where is Ambrose, Mrs. Parry?
Still at the hospital.
The hospital? He's ill.
He's been working.
Working in a hospital, Ambrose?
He should be home directly.
Home? Oh, yes. He makes it clear that he is with you in this letter.
May I know what he wrote?
Certainly. He says, something has happened which makes it impossible for me to return. Something which has changed the course of my life. Care of Mrs. Parry, Bliston.
Not a model of tact.
Mrs. Parry, I have known Ambrose Ellis intimately since he came as a rapscallion travelling showman and pitched his tent on a property of mine. I helped him with advice over the circus and turned it from a joke into a respectable money-making concern. He has several times asked me to marry him, and each time I told him that when he was on the way to becoming a gentleman and the owner of £20,000, I would consider it. With luck, he may turn into both, and I shall have had a hand in his success. So I have the right to ask you not to foster this fancy he has taken to you. That is all.
It is very interesting, Mrs. Lake, and I'm sure true, except for one trifling detail. Mr. Ellis has not taken a fancy to me.
He has not? Then who is this woman he talks about?
He does not talk about any woman. He says, does he not, that the course of his life is changed.
But that is what I said. Who is this creature?
I'm afraid, Mrs. Lake, you're faced with something far more dangerous.
Rubbish. What could be more dangerous than another woman?
I shirk the answer to that.
Why?
Because if one spent a week framing it, you would not begin to understand it.
I have never before been accused of either stupidity or want of education. I pride myself on being a woman of the world.
A woman is certainly that, who can hold a man at arm's length for 10 years until she's both mended his manners and counted his pennies.
No.
Mrs. Lake, this is the turning point of his life. I have a feeling that he cannot know his mind as yet. How can he be sure when for so long he's stifled the true half of himself? You know the other half so well. I beg you not to take an unfair advantage. Oh, he's here.
Are you insinuating that one half of his character is to be a sealed book?
Yes.
You, who have known him 3 days, have the temerity to say that to me, who taught him how to use a knife and fork?
I congratulate you. I must leave you to him. I ought to suggest a glass of brandy to give you courage. But I'm afraid you have no need of it.
Thank you.
There came a further knock, and Bet, as she hurried across the dimly lit room, did not notice Mrs. Lake as she stood half hidden behind the screen. She opened the door, and there was Mr. Ellis, the child asleep in his arms. In a dream of serenity, he walked across the room to the stairs. Together, they laid the boy upon his bed, and then returned to the living room.
He is sleeping the peacefulest sleep I ever did see him in. Mr. Ellisbach, tell me what you are thinking.
I am thinking that I have carried him home 2 miles uphill, and I can feel my arms as light as the air. And though I may never speak again of that journey until the hour before I die, it is not lost. I stopped and looked at the moon, the same face that blessed the hillside of Bethlehem. I could even hear him breathing, and I looked down. In the shadow of his cheek, there was the sorrow of the world. I moved on, but it was more than walking. I spanned the earth with one healing step.
No, that journey is not lost. Now, you get some sleep, too.
No sense in getting too deep, too quick.
Thank you for your letter, Ambrose.
But I
said thank you for your letter.
Yes. I'm sorry. I was not expecting to see you just then.
Have you been drinking?
No, but I was away. I beg your pardon, but you must have been travelling for hours. But, and you look as fresh as...
I make it my business to look fresh. You know that. Your collar is creased. Are you not going to kiss me?
How is everything?
Not entirely satisfactory. The circus was closed last night.
Closed?
Lights out and tarpaulins up.
But I have never had it idle since I opened it.
Well, you have it idle now. Bills all over the city. Ambrose Ellis Circus cancelled.
But why?
Workmen. It seems that the wife of one of the ostlers died, and somebody spread the rumour that she was undernourished. And a great deal was made of three children with rickets, which always sounds to me like a very dull game. Well, how is the musical dwarf? You'll need him now.
I wish you had not come so soon. I am not ready to meet you yet, but I will try to tell you what has happened to me. You know about this week here.
You mean this child?
He has called me to be a servant of God. He has called me to a mission as definitely as a servant of government is called to his.
Am I expected to take seriously what you were saying to her just now?
Whatever I said, I meant more truly than anything I have ever spoken in my life.
Well, I have known you moody and viciously discontented, but this is new. I am bewildered.
You will never be anything else until you accept the fact that all the time you have known me, I have been completely untrue to myself.
I see. The night you stormed at me, that if you were not financially independent by the time you were 45, you would hang yourself. Was that a sham? The midnight oil you burned, straining to squeeze shillings into your money box? Am I to believe that all the time you were really at your devotions?
Don't.
Have you forgotten your rage when Harvey's Fair filched that London circuit from under your nose, and how you plotted for a whole year to pay him back?
It is all true and as vile as you make it sound.
Look at the way you started up just now when I gave you bad news about your business. You were Napoleon.
No. Was I? It was a habit. Was it? I must be honest now at all costs. I must be honest. No, no. Not just a habit. I was angry. I was the little man of power again. I might never have seen him. I'm tired. Am I not? Suddenly, dead tired.
This Mrs. Perry, has she been called to a mission, too?
She believes in it and in me.
She does she? I begin to understand.
Now you're showing signs of the vulgarity you spent years trying to get rid of in me.
Oh, I have not come all this way to quarrel with you, my dear. Let us look squarely at this evangelical bout. What are your practical intentions?
Practical, I have not thought yet.
But, my dear, you must. You will sell the circus, of course. What will you do with your money?
I shall have little use for it.
No, you will give it away, obviously. Now, what will you live on? Incense, hymn singing, or just air?
I shall keep back enough for necessities.
Will that include wines and cigars? If it doesn't, my dear, it will be a vile-tempered preacher who will step up into that pulpit.
Preacher, pulpit.
But you'll take holy orders, of course.
Of course not, no.
But how else in a Christian country will you carry any authority? Oh, I shall travel miles to see you in that collar. And frankly, I shan't be the only one. The Midland Race Club, to start with, in a body. So you are not going to become a clergyman?
I intend to make up for the self-seeking I have been guilty of half my life. I shall use whatever talents I have for the service of my fellow creatures.
Talents? You mean your genius for making money out of the lower class?
I have others, surely, surely. I have others.
I shall be interested to hear. Name them.
Oh, God. This vision you have granted to me, I can feel it sliding, melting. Oh, God, do not let it go.
Ambrose, who is that woman you were talking to?
Yes, she is his mother.
But, of course, the whole business is leading up to a request for money.
Listen to me. He has, this week, with his hands and with his eyes, cured a score of mortally sick men.
Have you never heard of healing by faith?
In a house not a mile from here, there lies a soldier peacefully asleep, who not many hours ago was dead.
Dead? Well, he couldn't have been. He was obviously in a trance. Any doctor...
He was dead, and he was brought back to life by a miracle.
Performed by a child?
And I have been called to show that child to the world.
Ambrose, I'll make a guess.
that this boy implied that he had chosen you specially.
He told his mother.
Well, of course he did, and she told you. Oh. Do you know, Ambrose, these people have done what nobody in the whole of commercial Birmingham has ever been able to do. They have touched you on your weakest spot.
And what is that?
Your vanity. Has that struck home, Ambrose? I thought it would. Now, go on being honest. That picture of you, didn't you say, spanning the earth with one healing step? Well, that sounds very fine, but I thought he was the healer.
He will give me the power to lessen the sufferings of mankind.
By performing the miracle yourself?
Of course not. I'll
tell you. Ambrose, you meant that you saw yourself as the discoverer of this unique child.
Oh.
Striding through the countryside with one hand on his shoulder, the other cleaving away through millions of marveling onlookers, the showman. Was this new life to be so new, after all? Was there not to be a fair smacking of the old circus about it?
No, not the circus.
You want to give up the circus?
I must,
My dear, you can. The day after you left, Lord Millerton came to dinner. And what do you think he agreed to offer to Ambrose Ellis the chairmanship of the Millerton Strand Company?
Chairmanship.
You have worked extremely hard and deserve it. And I hope you appreciate the trouble I've taken. Look, it's daylight. Ambrose, I shall go and rest at the inn now. Come down to me for luncheon, and then we'll decide when to leave. Have a sleep, put on a starched collar, and don't get morbid. You are coming back with me?
Yes.
What a blessing it is that I understand you.
I am coming back.
It was early the following evening that we knew for certain that the child who had cured the sick and the wounded, the child who had performed a miracle, now lay moaning and crying upon his own bed, stricken with the cholera. In the living room, Mrs. Parry, worn and distressed, Miss Menner and Evan Howell, forever on the watch at the window for the doctor.
Can you see the hospital gate, Evan Howell?
I can see the wall that is nigh to it, Miss Minna. Edward Blacksmith will stand there and take the cloth from off his neck to wear it. If the doctor hath said yes, he will come to this house.
The soup is on the stove, Auntie Dillis. Is there anything else?
Oh, you're a good girl. No sign yet of the doctor?
Not yet.
Is there nothing more we can do without him?
I even know the locker where he keeps the drugs, but I would not dare to try and mix them. Oh, we must be patient.
Hoping no wrong in asking, Mrs. Parry, but when Mr. Ellis leave, was he in a bad way with himself?
I have no idea what state of mind he was in when he left before any of us was up.
Where's he gone to?
Birmingham, I expect.
Birmingham?
It's where he came from.
How are the symptoms?
Worse. There's the violent cramp and the breaking under the skin.
Oh, no, not that.
Thirsty, is he?
Dreadful.
Is he in great pain?
Oh, he keeps moaning and crying and has dug his hands deep into the mattress. He keeps asking for his father.
There he is, Mrs. Parry. Mrs. Parry.
Oh, is it the blacksmith? Is he waving?
No, a shake of the head.
Oh.
And he walketh slow towards his smithy.
Which means that our last hope is gone.
The doctor refuses to leave the patients that are cured to save the patient that cured them for him.
Mrs. Parry, listen. They are here. They want your help.
What can I do?
You are strong. Stronger than Ambrose Ellis. What help us?
Oh, I thought I was stronger. Why, he struggled and shied. My faith welled up inside me, a marvelous and easy slipping away from pain. But I forgot one thing, oh, no. I ask your pardon.
What for?
When you talked to Vistlo and I smiled at your young devotion, I forgot that I am a woman too. Whether a woman breathes with her body or her spirit, it is only through a man that she breathes to the full. If the faith I have nursed in Emrys Ellis has died, then my light is put out as well.
The doctor will be here in 10 minutes.
Mr. Ellis!
Ellis?
But he's just refused to leave the hospital.
Not that one. I went straight to him this morning when I left this house, and I knew that he would be no good to us.
You found another?
The best in Shropshire, they said. To save time, he has driven straight on down to the hospital to mix the drugs.
I'll stand on the road and watch for him.
His mother is with him.
Yes. We must be patient and wait.
He will live.
He will live. Every drop of my blood is crying out with the thought that he will live.
Will she tell them there is hope?
Yeah, but not in the Welsh. They will find double the comfort in the Welsh.
When I came in, then, you were on the edge of despair.
But as soon as I saw your eyes, I knew that all will be well.
You are tired.
I'm beyond tiredness. So are you.
Oh, far beyond.
Was it a dreadful journey?
Very long, but I was glad of it. You see, as soon as I had denied him, I knew that he would suffer human agony, and I had to look into the darkest corners of myself. Last night, I met with a shocking defeat. But I know that from that defeat, he means us to grow.
Slow. And sure, we shall grow.
This week, to you and me, he has given a new life, but it will be for us to live that life, not for him to live it for us. We will work in his name. For now, we shall teach in the open air.
Teach?
Reading, writing to start with, then I'll try and go deeper. I wasn't a bad schoolmaster when I was not smarting with insults. I shall teach as simply and truly as I can. And as you can help me do, some will welcome us, but there will be the others.
Oh, the scoffers.
We shall find ourselves on street corners in the rain, gaped at, taunted like gypsies.
Oh, one day we shall look back and all that will be nothing.
In those villages, I looked into their faces, empty, inquiring eyes. They were my eyes, all of them.
Staring deep into you out of your own childhood.
A great multitude waiting to be told, Mrs. Parry.
Waiting to hear again, fresh and new, the story of the Son of God.
Waiting to be assured that they are not beasts of the field.
And that their salvation is in their own hands.
The doctor is walking up the drive.
Take his box.
Oh, now you will... Oh...
Was it? Did you feel something?
A wind. A wind of music.
Music that swept through the room.
What was that? Did you feel a wind through the house?
But the curtains should have moved.
And yet they didn't.
And I was thinking how heavy the air was today.
Bet.
Excuse me.
There was a wind blew through the house.
Yes. Quite right. Just when he died.
Oh.
From the plague he died. No, better not to come near, Mrs. Parivach, for this plague is a terrible thing, and I just cross his hands over his chest. Oh, I'm glad to see him at rest. But I never wish to see a dog under some carriage wheels to be in such pain as that lad was. Though I shall never be the same, of course, with him being my only one. Please, can I thank you, Mrs. Parry, for all you've done? He could not have been treated better if he was a king.
He is more than a king.
Not in his own sight, Mrs. Parry, excuse me, nor yet in mine. He lived like any boy, and like any boy, he died too. Like them soldiers, he died, his poor flesh smelling awful with a plague. But no mother is bothered by that, of course, and his face is all right. As easy as a flower. Young he was, but good company.
Mr. Ellis, sir, could I speak to you for a minute?
There was a wind. Blew down the hill. And through the village. And then? It rose up. To the loving sky.
He was crying to himself with the pain. And all of a sudden, stop. And he turns to me as if nothing mattered in the world. And speak very clear and slow. Mam, he says in the Welsh, go to Emrys Ellis and say to him that now he has looked in his heart deep and long. What he sees there he got to mark very careful. For I am dying, he says, before my time. And Emrys Ellis is going to make his life accorded. And then in his pain he'll turn over. I never said no more than that to Lucifer. He had lived and learned his letters. He would have been a lovely speaker. I will go for some warm water. Oh, dear, Aunt Will. It is in my kitchen that I will miss him.
The 5 days' wonder of Blestin is over.
And the corpse of a Welsh peasant boy waits for a grave without a name.
The village hath asked for you, Emrys Ellis. All round the gate they are gathered.
Your work is going to start.
But what do I say?
Evan, how does the Lord's Prayer begin in Welsh?
The Lord will help you, sir. Speak with him homely, for he knoweth you well. Ein tad ar hwnwyd yn y nefoedd.
Ein tad ar hwnwyd yn y nefoedd.
Sang teiddiar dy enw. Deled dy deirnas. Gwneler dy ewyllus.
Gwneler dy ewyllus.
Megis yn y nef.
Megis yn y nef.
Felly ar y ddeiar hefyd.
Felly ar y ddeiar hefyd.
What will you do now, Mr. Pitter?
I've saved enough to retire. I shall finish my book.
Why?
This week in Blestin, I have seen strange things. I've seen faces that have been as heavy as clay turn into shining lamps.
Yesterday you said it had made you wonder. What of today?
All the facts are capable of rational explanation. Before the birth, hallucination on the part of the mother. The music heard by the village. Self-suggestion, induced by years of suppressed emotionalism. The miracle at the hospital, catalepsy. The child's foreknowledge of Mr. Ellis's arrival, fortune-telling. I should hazard that he is not the Messiah.
But we believe that he is.
If you believe, then he is. And whatever sand we may wager your faith is built on, the work you will do will be good. I and those like me may be in every way better informed, but we have nothing like that. Have we even any more than the mole? Piteous in his deformity, burrowing blindly through the dank earth, when an inch above his snout there is air and sun and the wild, stinging, cleansing rain. Are we better than the mole?
Why not Christ in body?
Dying, 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 dying
In The Wind of Heaven by Emlyn Williams, adapted for radio by Barbara Cooper, Dilys Parry was played by Sean Phillips. Ambrose Ellis, Freddie Jones, and Pitter, Nigel Stock. Bet, Elizabeth Miles, Mena, and Harrod Rees. Mrs. Lake, Margot Boyd, and Evan, Stuart Jones. The harpist was Seanad Williams, and the singers, the Kumbach Male Voice Choir, conductor T.R. James. The play was directed by Enid Williams.